All right, we're going to get your calls in a moment. I'd love to hear from you. You can call me or you can text me. The number's the same, 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. It's Tom Jordan with you till noon today on All Talk with Tom Jordan and Kevin Deese. And Kevin Deese filling in for Paul W. at 12:05. So we'll hear from him in just a bit as well. Attorney General Dana Nessel, she is trying to dismiss a lawsuit by a guy named Richard Baird. She claims immunity. So this is not the only immunity claim that's coming down. Dana Nessel says she's got immunity as well, as she wasn't involved in the Flint water prosecution, is what she says, which was handled by other people within her department. This guy, Richard Baird, his charges were eventually dismissed. He argues that his rights were violated in this investigation, the way that Dana Nessel's office orchestrated the investigation, because the prosecution used a one-judge grand jury, which itself was deemed to be a violation of his constitutional rights. Todd Flood joining us, attorney at Flood Law. Todd, good to have you back.
Tom, thanks for having me, bud.
So what do you think? Does Baird have an argument here, or does Dana Nessel have an argument?
Well, the prosecution in this case normally wins. So Kim Worthy, Fadwa Mahmood, Dana Nessel being sued for their prosecution and investigation into the Flint water crisis using the one-man grand jury. You have to remember, Tom, this is a little bit different than the immunity case that's going to be decided shortly by the United States Supreme Court. This is a case wherein prosecutors have always been protected, had a bubble around them from prosecutions, unless there's some sort of gross negligence and they actually got involved in the investigation themselves, wherein they went to the crime scene and they told police officers what to do, where to do it at the crime scene. Then you could potentially pierce. But here they enjoy the protections for their acts as a prosecutor. So I don't see where this goes any too much further. The one-man grand jury, you have to remember that that had been used for decades as it related to other types of crimes. Mr. Bursch did a masterful job in defending and arguing in front of the Supreme Court, saying that, hey, listen, the judge in a one-man grand jury, he can help ferret through and get through the investigation, but there's a separation of powers. It's up to the prosecutor to issue the charges, not the judge. So that's why we have a citizen's grand jury, not a one-man. And that's where that decision came down. So to make it simple for everybody to understand, prosecutors enjoy the benefit of governmental immunity.
All right. But so people understand, though, even though the one judge grand jury had been used for a long, long time, you know, explain to us why it was found to be unconstitutional. I mean, this one judge had pretty much unilateral authority to not only investigate, but prosecute and then convict, correct?
So not convict, but
not convict?
Charge.
Okay.
But no, can't convict. That's up to a jury. So he had two arguments going on. The one-man grand jury, the judge, you got to remember the separation of powers. The judicial branch can't come down and issue the charge. That's the executive branch. That's the prosecutor. And what was going on in these cases was that the prosecutor would feed the information through testimony and evidence to the judge. And that judicial officer would also give the charge. So the separation of power says, no, no, no. You can bring testimony in front. You can do all of those things. He's an investigative. You use that tool as an investigative tool. And why did we do that? We did that in cases where, you know, witnesses needed to be protected, where the mob was involved, or there was some, you know, you wanted to do it so that no one was intimidated by testifying. So you would bring the investigative branch here or investigation here in front of the judge to protect those witnesses. And then in turn, The judge would swear the person under oath. He would testify. All the information would come, and then the prosecutor, that's the body of, you know, the executive portion of this, they would then in turn issue the charge. So there was two distinct tools going on. When I did it by what is called a preliminary exam. I wanted it to be out in front of the public. So I had, you know, a preliminary exam where I had to show probable cause was elicited for a crime being committed and probable cause that that person committed the crime. And everybody could see it in front of a judge. So there was two distinctive ways of doing it in this case. I can't imagine in my wildest dreams that this case goes much further. And I would think also, be careful what you wish for, because if this case goes on, then, you know, all the evidence may be revealed to the public of what the charging or what the facts were for charging the defendants or the suspects. So I can't imagine, one, that this goes further. Two, I don't think it inures to the benefit of anyone.
Well, what we know is that, you know, Richard Baird owes a whole lot of money, like more than $800,000 in attorney's fees and damages,
sure,
and the like. And yet his due process rights were found to be violated. So is there any accountability, or does it all fall on Richard Baird to just pay all those fees?
Unfortunately so. I don't think there's a remedy and this for Mr. Baird. I just don't see it. I mean, it's a it's an effort and an attempt, and this case too may very well get up to our Supreme Court for piercing that immunity argument. I doubt it, because it wasn't a personal act. It wasn't an act where, you know, Dana Nessel was actually gone out to the crime scene, or, you know, she's using the defense that there was a wall. I was only doing the civil part. But for any of the other people being sued, I just can't imagine, because they weren't going to, you know, the crime scene and telling police officers how to do their job. I can't see how this this argument pierces that very important bubble around immunity.
How do people protect themselves then? I guess that's my larger question. If you're accused of doing something and the prosecution methodology is found to be a violation of an individual's constitutional rights, but the time that that's ruled, it's like months and years have gone by. You've already paid out hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, what's to prevent someone else from doing this in the future?
Great question. So this is where, you know, I think you see cases, and I have cases like this that I am suing on. You see cases where the gross negligence was done by a police officer or a prosecutor, for example, in the Duke LaCrosse case, where they legitimately held back or they hid evidence from the defendant, or they manipulated evidence from the defense. And it was a unconstitutional violation of what we call your 1983 civil rights claim, where someone manipulated evidence or tampered with evidence, or the police officer turned a blind eye, you know, to what he was expected in his duties were supposed to do. When a citizen, his rights are violated under that high bar of gross negligence, that's when you can pierce the bubble. You actually have to see a prosecutor do something that manipulates or breaches, you know, their unquestionable mandates of following the law. When they do that and they hide, tamper, things of that sort, prosecutorial misconduct, then I believe you have a very colorable
but
action.
Doesn't that, violating that due process fall into that in some way or some fashion, do you think?
So a violation of due process, think about it from this standpoint. I get a confession from a defendant that murdered 10 people. And in my attempt to get that confession, I violated his due process rights. Yeah. I didn't read a Miranda.
Right.
But yet, you know, okay, so fine. I didn't read a Miranda, What happens? The court in the criminal action kicks the case out against the guy that killed 10 people.
Yeah.
There
right.
is not I mean, a civil action for that.
Right. Okay, I gotcha. I appreciate it very much, as always. Thanks for coming on and explaining these things to me. I need this explained. Thanks. Todd Flood, attorney at Flood Law. Appreciate it, Todd.
Tom, always a pleasure, my friend. Be well.
You too. Be safe as well. More to come, 760 WJR.